With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome to La Liga Lowdown's Match Day 28 recap. This is the weekend after which we only have 10 rounds of fixtures left, so we're very much getting into the business end of the season. I'm your host Matt Clark and I'm joined by Sam Leveridge. Sam, how are you?
I'm good, thank you Matt. It's been a long weekend, not the most entertaining of results this weekend, or at least until Barcelona came into action on Sunday night, but yeah, no, it's been an interesting weekend.
Yeah, we have to admit it's not been the greatest in terms of goal scoring or in terms of drama, but we'll do our best to bring you the absolute best of the action. And Sam, you yourself were at three separate games this weekend. You were at the Wanda on Friday night to see Atleti's win over Cadiz. You were then at Getafe to see the Bordalas return and the football champagne that was 0-0. And then, of course, on Sunday, you were at Vallecas to see Rayo's entertaining, actually, game with Sevilla, and we'll hear from more on that game from Robbie Dunn coming up very soon. But Sam, if you just want to run through those three games first and just your general feelings of those three matches.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Atletico, Cadiz, I mean, João Félix scored after, 2.5 minutes? And at that point, I think everyone in the ground was expecting Atleti to go to walk away with it and make it look easy, but they didn't. Not at all. Cadiz were the better team in the first half, especially. I mean, Atletico had Koke back in midfield, completely lost the balance they've had with Jeffrey Kondogbia in there up until his injury, and you could really tell that Kondogbia wasn't there and that Koke wasn't the right replacement for Kondogbia. And then obviously it was kind of just Atletico grinding out the result. And I mean, I was talking to some Cali fans after the game, and it was very much a game where the difference in quality on the bench made the difference in the result, because Atletico could bring on Luis Suarez, they could bring on Angel Correa, and in the end that was what kind of made the difference. Then Getafe Valencia, well, I kind of deleted that 90 minutes from my memory. I don't think anybody ever wants to relive any of that. Absolutely terrible. I can't remember the exact stats now, but there's something like 40 fouls or something like that, 11 yellow cards. I mean, it was one of those games that you just never want to have the misfortune to watch. And we were there in the Colosseum. It was just starting to rain. There's no roof in the stands. Just starting to rain as the injury time board went up of 9 minutes. And the whole ground just seemed to grow. Nobody cared what the result was anymore. They just wanted to get home. And then Rayo Sevilla, which was kind of the polar opposite of that. I mean, it was a 1-1 draw, but it was very entertaining. VAR kind of very active again. But yeah, I know. I think both teams were really going for it and trying to get the win, and in the end neither one could, but both the teams had chances to do that. So yeah, a mixed bag of action in Madrid this weekend. It makes a nice change, because often La Liga puts games like that, they put them back to back, three games in a row in the same city. So to have the three spread across 3 days was a nice change to go ground hopping.
Yeah, lovely window into the weekend of yourself and Madrid football. Just to pick up on a couple of those points that you touched on there. Firstly, I think Bordalas will definitely want to see that game over again, because for him, that's the purest form of football you can ever get, isn't it? 0-0 with so many fouls, and it seems like a perfect Bordalas 99 minutes.
I refuse to believe that even Bordalas can enjoy that 90 minutes.
Well, we'd have to ask him, wouldn't we? But unfortunately, we can't do that. Just on Atleti, obviously a big game against Manchester United coming up in the Champions League, 1-1 from the first leg. Atleti, much the better side, but without the reward of the result. Cristiano Ronaldo ominously scoring a hat-trick at the weekend in the Premier League as well. As an Atleti fan, how do you feel going into that second leg?
Yeah, well, with Josema Jimenez getting injured as well against Cadiz, injuring himself with a brilliant goal line clearance, it's not great. The thought of Felipe going up against an in-form, confident Cristiano Ronaldo is a little bit scary. But no, I mean, Atletico in these Champions League nights, I mean, they've done it time and time again. They prove that no matter how much the odds are stacked against them, they'll turn up. And in the first leg, everyone was expecting Manchester United to give them a bit of a shock, and Atletico were by far the better team. So I'd like to think that going away from home, they'll do an even better job of kind of seeing that result out. So quietly optimistic is perhaps the best way to describe it. I'm not getting my hopes up too much, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Atleti do come out with the pass to the next round.
Interesting. Well, they did it at Anfield 2 years ago, so yeah. Anything is possible, of course, with Diego Simeone on European nights. Okay, then now let's get some more in-depth on that game at Vallecas. Then it was a big game for multiple reasons. Rayo on the back of a poor run of results. Sevilla, of course, still trying to keep the pressure on Real Madrid as much as they could. So let's hear from the author of the book on Rayo Vallecano, Robbie Dunn. He spoke to you, Sam, after the game.
Bueno, ha tirado desde ahí.
¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡De pateador, bebé, para el Rayo! Desde la parte derecha, tira un par de amagos.
And I'm joined by Robbie Dunn, author of the best English language book there is about Rayo Vallecano. Hi, Robbie, how are you?
I'm good, Sam. It's also the only English language Rayo Vallecano book, so
still the best
it has
one,
to be the best.
Exactly. So, Robbie, I mean, what do you make of that? A 1-1 draw with Sevilla? I mean, is that 2 points dropped for Rayo or 1 point gained?
I would say it's 1 point gained, because regardless of what happened on the field, Rayo will have been looking at that game thinking Sevilla second in the table. They haven't been playing all that great in terms of getting goals, but under Julen Lopetegui, they're a formidable opponent. And Rayo, despite the early season hopes and aspirations we tied to them, this is a relegation contender, and I think Andoni Areola has done excellently with them, but this is a squad that probably not probably they are fighting for relegation, against relegation right now. So I think that it's a point gain for Rayo regardless of what happened in the match. When the fixture list came out, this was a game that Rayo would have been looking at thinking a point here will do us, will be fine.
Yeah, exactly. You touched on it there. I mean, last time you were on the podcast was October. We were talking about Rayo and their European charge. Now things are a bit different. No wins in 2022. I mean, what's gone wrong for Rayo over the last 2-3 months?
Yeah, the reality of it is that, as I said, this is, and I wasn't getting excited back then. I was thinking that this is just a game of accumulating as many points as you can, as early as you can, and trying to maybe fight off relegation so you're not kind of dragged into it in the last 3 and 4 games of the season. I think Rayo probably, they did as well as they could in the first half of the season, but they've shown now, and I know that the Copa del Rey run didn't really help them in that they were trying to kind of rest players and make sure that they were ready for that Betis two-legged tie in the semi-final. But I think when you ask what's gone wrong, essentially this is as good as Iriola is going to be, at the end of the day, you have to be both lucky and an exceptional manager to outperform your resources. And Rayo Vallecano's resources are that of a relegation contender. That's the first thing. And secondly, the fact that you have a president who's waging war on his own club, on his own fan base, on his own, I don't like to use this word, but on his own asset. It's like me buying a car and driving into a wall. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, even looking at the substitutes in the game on Sunday, I mean, Sevilla ended the game with, I think it was Anthony Martial, Youssouf En-Nesyri, and Rafa Mir up front, and Rayo has Sergi Guardiola on his own. I mean, there's no real comparison between the two, is there? But I mean, one area that has been kind of up for debate with the players has been that Iraola has been kind of swapping his goalkeepers around. I mean, Luka Zidane had been starting, and then Stol Dimitrievski was back in the team for Sevilla. I mean, why is it the Rayo haven't kind of settled on a first choice in the last few months?
Well, I guess that maybe the easy answer to that is, when you've got two first-choice goalkeepers, it means you've got no first-choice goalkeeper, really. And I think neither player is consistent enough in their performances to merit that. And Dmitrievski was really good, I think it was last season, and he has been good in spells for Rayo, but he does have that kind of underlying inconsistency that just doesn't work for a goalkeeper. And Lucas Zidane, I think Lucas Zidane's a really difficult goalkeeper to assess, because he has the name attached to him, and his dad was a number 10. And it's hard sometimes for my brain certainly, to understand Lucas Zidane as a goalkeeper. And sometimes if he makes a mistake that, say, maybe Marc-Andre ter Stegen makes, I'd be looking, oh, that's Zidane. He was kind of trying to do something too fancy or too flashy.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of touching on inconsistency and reputation, the goal scorer for Rayo today was Bebe. I mean, no Isi Balathon, no Alvaro García, but he was starting and he played pretty well for Rayo and got the goal. I mean, how do you kind of define Bebe for anybody who hasn't watched him?
He will offer you shots, he will offer you verticality, and that's it. And I think that he is certainly a strange one in that. Another guy whose reputation tends to precede him. You say the name Bebe to any English Premier League fan, Manchester United fan, they'll laugh first and be like, oh my God, where is he? Like, how is he still playing the top flight? But in reality, Bebe has been consistent for Rayo, and consistent in the very narrow scheme of what he does. And I think that he probably has fallen victim to that poor spell at Manchester United, maybe poor recruiting or whatever. And I interviewed him at the stadium a couple of years ago, and I think he kind of understands that. And I asked him about his Man United spell, and he just answered it really normally. Like, he was like, they wanted me, they're Man United, I signed with them, didn't work out, so what?
Exactly. So looking ahead, Robbie, I mean, next up is Atletico at home, but then it's Granada, Valencia and Alaves, a bit more easy run for Rayo. I mean, they should be okay. They shouldn't be safe to stay up this season, right?
I think so, yeah. But I mean, it's funny that the way these things work, you get caught into this spiral of doom and bad results follow another bad result, and all of a sudden the walls start kind of closing in around you and you're absolutely desperate. And that's why I say that point today against Sevilla was excellent, or was very good for Rayo, because it kind of just stabilized things, because they obviously got knocked out of the Copa, which is a separate thing entirely, but they were on a really poor streak, and they played some excellent teams during that streak. So they were beaten by Celta Vigo, Betis, Real Madrid, and Celta Vigo, I know they're not fighting for Europe at the moment, but they're an excellent side and they're playing really well, and they're the kind of team that really causes you problems. But I think throughout that spell, Rayo have been playing quite well, and I think that speaks to how good Iraola is. He hasn't lost his cool, he hasn't lost the plot, he hasn't kind of just gone defensive. They're still playing quite well, and against Sevilla they pushed him to the pin of their collar, and they continue to play an expressive style of football, and I think it will be enough to get them over the line and stay up this year, which is always and has always been the goal, I think, despite the noise from outside when they were going so well in the earlier part of the season.
Yeah, I think everyone in Vallecas would take that. So thanks very much, Robbie. Thanks for your time.
No worries, Sam.
And let's hand back over to Matt for the rest of the action.
Thank you very much, Robbie. Always great to hear from you. So Sevilla, again, another draw. That's too many draws now. Only Cadiz have drawn more in La Liga this season, and they've drawn the last five away from home in La Liga. Sam, it's just not enough to push for the title, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, Julen Lopetegui was raging after the game about VAR, and I think he had a point, to be honest, but at the same time, it was this handball rule that we've seen many times before. He won't be the only one to have been annoyed by it. And Sevilla, they need to stop looking for excuses and start picking up the points if they are going to finish second this season. I mean, Barcelona are hot on their heels. They're only 5 points behind, but they have a game in hand at home against Rayo Vallecano. And and you'd fancy them to win that one. If they win that, the difference is 2 points. And the next away game that Sevilla have, and we know how their away form is at Camp Nou. So we could be here in 2-3 weeks' time with Barcelona in second in the table. And I think that's a bit of an indictment on the rest of the top teams in La Liga.
Well, that's quite a statement there, Samuel. But yeah, I think you're probably right. Given the state they were in when Xavi came in, you either say the rest of the top teams have had poor seasons, or you say Xavi's been remarkably impressive in his time at Barca, I guess, if you want to look at the glass half full take. But yeah, 4-0 win for the Blaugrana. That's 4 times in the last 6 in a Liga they've scored 4. Very impressive again. Ferran in amongst the goals. Dembele, fantastic. Even Ricky Puig got on the score sheet. So, yeah, all going well for Barca. They've got a tough fixture list ahead, though. Galatasaray away. They're going to have to win that one because they only drew the first leg. And then, of course, it's the Clásico at Santiago Bernabéu. And Real Madrid will want to extend their winning run in Clásicos, of course. So, yeah, do you see Barca as likely to be second best in the league? They're playing like second best, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the win over Osasuna showed how far they came. I mean, we remember the 2-2 draw at El Sadar. I mean, Barcelona looked like a very average team in that game. I mean, they had Eze Abdi was on the score sheet. I mean, Barca at that point were really relying on these youngsters and just seemed incapable of playing to a higher level. But this time they made it look easy to beat Osasuna. And you're kind of thinking what was going on earlier on this season. And that quality in attack, the players they brought in, makes a massive difference. But they're playing the way that Xavi wants them to play. And he's kind of installed that philosophy now. And they look like a team playing with confidence as well. I mean, we saw Gavi play like tricks and rabonas and all sorts kind of in his own half trying to get out of a press. You think that's the kind of confidence that this team just didn't have earlier in the season, and Xavi's kind of instilled that again, and much could depend on these next few weeks. As we just said, I mean, they could end up second. Alternatively, they could lose in Turkey, they could lose the Clásico, they could lose against Sevilla, and suddenly maybe they're not even top four. So we can talk of how Barcelona and their form as much as we like, but this is the crunch time now where they have to win these games, and they did it last time. They had such an important game against Atletico, so as a Barcelona fan, I think you could be pretty optimistic that they'll turn up for the big occasion again. But this is a lot of pressure on a very new squad who haven't had a lot of time to gel, and a very young squad. We've seen kind of Ferran Torres is already a leading player in this team, and he's a young guy. He's not going to be used to taking that weight on his shoulders for a Clásico, for a decisive European tie. So let's see how they handle it. I think it's too close to call at the moment, but I think 2 more La Liga match days and we'll have a much clearer view of how the La Liga table is going to look at the top of the table.
Setting us up for tuning in for the next couple of weeks nicely there, Sam. Yeah, I agree. It's all still to be done. Very encouraging signs, but the work is still there to be done. Other teams in that race, we mentioned Atletico. Would you like to touch on them a little bit more? They're back in that top four after last week's win at Betis. They got that kind of grinding out 2-1 win over Cadiz. Not spectacular, but getting results. That's 4 wins in a row in the league. So getting back to some sort of Atleti that we're used to.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not forget when we talk about Barcelona, but Atleti are on the same number of points as Barcelona. They have played an extra game, but they're on the same number of points. And I think I said it a few weeks ago when we talked about the top four race, and I said that for me, Atletico will grind out these results. And that's exactly what they've done since the Celta game, the Cadiz game. They're grinding out these results. Not necessarily playing particularly well, but they're grinding out the results that they need to secure that top four spot. It's still very tight. I mean, Betis refused to lie down and give up. But I think the quality and the squad depth will just about see Atletico go over the line. If they continue to progress in the Champions League, then maybe that will become a harder task. The same for Barcelona in the Europa League if they prioritise that. But I think the top four we have today will be the top four that we end the season with.
You heard it here first, listeners. Sam has gone for the current top four, finishing in those top four positions. Betis, as you said there, they were coming into this game 5 without a win in all competitions. They lost the first leg of the Europa, last 16 tie against Eintracht Frankfurt 2-1. But they did get a win, an important win, this Sunday against Athletic Club 1-0. The goal coming in the first half from Borja Iglesias, from across on the left from Juan Miranda. And it got a bit feisty in the second half. Nabil Fekir does as he's wont to do and found himself frustrated and lashed out and sent off. So he'll be missing for the next couple. It's quite hard to read Betis at the moment because they've been so good this season, but yet, as you say, a couple of poor results and they could slip right out of the picture. But Manuel Pellegrini was back in his tracksuit, so all seemed okay today.
Yeah, no, and Rui Silva back between the sticks, which was a big difference from Claudio Bravo, a clean sheet and a 1-0 win. I think there might have been a bit of a connection between the two there. And I thought he played really well. But, I mean, the concern for Betis taking from that one is that Fekir and that red card, I mean, remains to be seen how many games he'll be suspended for, but he can face up, I think it's between 4 and 12 games suspension because the ball was out of play when he lashed out. Iker Mainayin, and that could be a big blow to Betis' hopes. I mean, Sergio Canales has had a few injury issues in the last few weeks, and then you're suddenly relying on a team that is missing the two star playmaking attacking midfielders. But Betis do seem to have what they need to kind of cling on and secure that Europa League spot, if not kind of push for the top four. But I think they'll be ready if any of the top four currently do slip up. I mean, if Barcelona lose that Clásico, that game against Sevilla, if Atletico drop points needlessly, as they have a few times, Betis are showing that they will keep the pace up and be ready to pounce.
Yeah, it's a decent run of fixtures for them coming up before the Copa final. So you'd probably imagine them to be there or thereabouts, still in the hunt as we head into May. Just a word on Fekir, though. I did tweet this. I said, you know, he's a marvellous footballer, but he just loses his head too often. I know he gets kicked all over the park, and I know that he doesn't get anywhere near the amount of fouls that he probably should. But at some point, he's just got to try and control his temper, hasn't he? Because it's going to cost Betis sooner or later, and obviously it has in previous seasons, but oh, was that 5 red cards now in just over 100 appearances? It's not a great ratio, is it?
No, not at all. And he's such an important player for Betis as well that they can't afford to give him up. And Borja Iglesias said it after the game that they're the only team in Europe still competing in three different competitions at this stage in the season. So to lose a player of the importance of Fekir is unforgivable, whatever it may be. And so for it to be for something so stupid as lashing out, kicking out, down in the corner flag when you're 1-0 up, I mean, there's no excuse for it.
Yeah. So Betis, 2 points off the top four as it stands. 2 points further back is Real Sociedad. They had a 1-0 win over Alaves. Again, a pretty uneventful game, saving for Mikel Oyarzabal's free kick, which was headed in by Zubimendi. And then 2 points behind them is Villarreal, who had also a 1-0 win over Celta de Vigo. Important wins for those, of course, Villarreal, Betis and Real Sociedad all winning 1-0. Barca, far more impressively, 4-0. So the state of play in the Champions League position is pretty much as you were, because all of 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th all winning this weekend. So not a lot of change there, but of course Sevilla, the massive kind of losers of the weekend in terms of the title race. Real Madrid could go 10 points clear on Monday night if they win at Mallorca. But we'll leave it there for part one. Stay tuned because we'll have plenty more coming your way, including all of the action from the relegation teams, as well as we'll hear from Paco Pollet on Levante, and we'll discuss our MVP and our moments of the week. Stay tuned.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. It's our recap of match day 28 in La Liga Santander. And now we're going to turn our focus to the bottom half. And again, results are very much needed at this time of the season. Only 10 games to go. Teams that are struggling are running out of fixtures. One of those teams, of course, most at risk of relegation is, of course, Levante. Rock bottom of the table. They were taking on an Espanyol side who had only won once away from home all season. So it was an opportunity for Levante to get 3 points. But unfortunately for them, they were unable to do so. So let's check in with Paco Pollitt on what happened at the Ciutat de Valencia. He spoke with Sam.
¿Cómo que gol y medio? ¿Cómo? No, pero no. Lo metió en un partido.
¡De Dani Gómez!
¿Ves? Vaya, hombre, vaya. El que sabe, sabe.
And I'm joined now by Paco Pollitt, who was covering the game live on Saturday, Levante and their 1-1 draw up against Espanyol. Paco, what are your feelings after that one? I mean, a draw, but should it have been a win for Levante in their battle against the drop?
Yeah, possibly so. I believe that at this point, when doom has been, you know, knocking at the door the whole season, Levante cannot rely on having a sliver of luck at any point. And we actually saw that circumstance in that 89th minute penalty, which was, in my view, pretty clear. You know, but the ref didn't decide the call, and he didn't actually listen to any of the orders coming from the VAR room. But regardless of that last minute penalty, I think the Levante actually deserved the win. They had more dominance on the offense. Actually, if you check out the stats at the end of the game, they had more chances generated, shots on target, offsides, corner kicks. I don't know. They tried to win the game, even though their squad isn't at this point 100% healthy. You have important players being out of the lineup. They are suffering quite a lot at the back. That's, you know, something that's become a template for Levante and one of their main traits. And Espanyol scored in the only real chance, or actually I would say the only real gift that Levante's defense gave them.
But definitely a good performance from Levante despite the result. I mean, just going back to that penalty, Paco, you touched on it there. I mean, Sergio Postigo tweeted after the game about the fact that anybody who'd played the game would have known that was a penalty. I mean, was it that clear a penalty for you? I mean, looking at it in live time, I wasn't entirely convinced, but then watching the replays, I could see that it was a pretty clear penalty. I mean, it was surprising that the referee didn't go and look at it, right?
Yeah, because it's like the typical, whenever you've played the game, even at an amateur level, and you have been a defender, as in my case, for example, there's that typical play when you are going at the ball and the forward is going at the ball, and whoever gets there first is going to be, brought down inside the box. If the defender makes the clearance, it's going to be a foul on his favor. But if the attacker, as it happened with Dani Gómez, is a slight, tiny bit, millisecond quicker, he's going to touch the ball, get it out of the way. And what happened was that Cabrera ran him over. You know, he was hit both at the chest and down on the knee. I don't remember what's the knee at the leg. I believe that the foul was clear inside the box. And in such an important play, I always believe, even though the rules of the game, which are made up every single season and are changed every single season regarding this kind of plays and the use of the VAR, I believe that the referee should always look at this particular place, because you're talking about a 90-minute penalty, a crucial play in the game, which changed the tide in one favor or the another. And at this point, Sam, we're talking about teams who are literally with their lives on the line.
Yeah, and I mean, talking of luck, I mean, they had no luck at all to lose, say, Luis Morales to that knee injury against Athletic Club last weekend. But I mean, Jorge de Frutos and his body played quite well at the weekend. I thought they were both quite lively. I mean, do you think they can step up and replace kind of the Morales presence in attack?
Yeah, I'd say that de Frutos could be regarded as the MVP for the second half of the season so far because of his, you know, consistency, scoring and assisting, and also, you know, helping in the front attack and in the attacking front with the high pressure. You know, he's an all-around player, and he's getting, I'd say, interesting looks from other sides regarding next season, because most of the Levante players, if the team gets relegated, are going to have release clauses to some extent, and Jorge de Frutos could be a very, very tasty player in the market, and that's why he's getting a big benefit from his performances lately. But yeah, losing José Luis Morales is a big blow, not only because of the goals he could score, which haven't been, you know, amazing this season, or the assists, but because he's, at the end of the day, he's a leader. He's one of the emblematic players for this squad. And that's why Levante definitely need these kind of players. You spoke about Bardi. I think he's not having a good year overall, because of injuries, because of the many changes in the sidelines. I believe that Paco López had pinned him down in the perfect spot for him, in the perfect tactical system for him. And when he was sacked and in came Javi Pereira, Bardi's mind got a bit jumbled. He didn't really know where to play. And later with Alessio Lisi, he's still trying to find his footing wherever he's placed in the lineup. And that's why I think he's not having the best season. And also he's not having any luck with the set pieces. So yeah, I would say De Frutos is mostly the player to watch in Levante in the next following weeks. And I think Levante's tiny chances of salvation are going to go through his playing and his goals and his assists.
Yeah, well, you said it there, Paco, tiny chances of salvation. I mean, can Levante stay up? No one would have thought it a couple of weeks ago, but they've had one defeat in their last five. I mean, they are in good form, better form than Alaves, are around the same kind of pace as Cadiz, better form than Granada, better form than Mallorca. I mean, can Levante achieve the impossible?
I'd say it's going to be very tough for a number of things. Two of them come to mind. The first one, obviously, is that the schedule is going to be very, very challenging for them. After the game against Espanyol, they are going to face Osasuna in match day 29. And later, they only have two more games with teams that you could say that are of their league. I mean, which are fighting for the salvation and in the bottom half of the table, who are, I believe, Alaves in the second to last game of the season, and also Granada Levante, which will take place mid-April. Those two are the only ones where Levante could actually win the 3 points and, you know, detract a potential 3 points from the opposition. But the rest of the games, they are facing Villarreal, Barça, Sevilla, Valencia, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad at home, Rayo Vallecano. They are closing the season in Vallecas, and that's why I believe that it's going to be very tough. It's true that Levante have showed against big sides that they can deliver if they have a good night, but I think that the rest of the contenders for salvation have much more, you'd say, palatable schedules, and it's going to be easier for them to perform their own miracles, especially if you compare them to what Levante have to face ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So stay tuned to La Liga Lowdown for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll have Paco on here crying either tears of happiness or depression at the end of the season for Levante. Thanks very much, Paco.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for that, Paco. As we know, Levante fighting a very hard battle there. They're now 6 points away from safety with that point. So it's still looking pretty tough for them, although not impossible. And they have definitely improved under Alessio Lisci. Elsewhere in the relegation picture this weekend, we had a massively important direct duel between Granada and Elche at Nuevo Los Cármenes. It was Rubén Torrecilla who took charge of Granada after, of course, Robert Moreno was sacked last weekend. But unfortunately for them, the goals and the points still didn't come. Elche winning 1-0 with a goal from Fidel. And elsewhere, Alaves as well at the bottom. They fell to a 1-0 defeat away at Real Sociedad in a Basque derby there. Sam, what's your take on the relegation picture after this weekend? Is it still looking like the bottom three are the ones that are going to go?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Granada are the ones who are going to be most sweating and looking over their shoulder. And maybe Cadiz are going to take something from this weekend. I mean, the game against Atleti, obviously they didn't take any points, but they can certainly kind of take some credit from that and some confidence and think that up against not so strong teams, they'll be able to get better results. So, I mean, it's all to play for. There is still a big battle on down at the bottom, but I think Granada, Mallorca, they're both not in great form and have that opportunity to slip into the bottom three if the bottom three do pick up form. And then as well, there's a couple of teams who are kind of floating around there. I mean, I think Elche are more or less safe now. Rayo, I think, have just got enough of a buffer. But Getafe, I mean, their good form has dropped off a little bit and the fixture list is looking pretty tough for them. I mean, they've got Mallorca as their next home fixture. But then I think they face Real Madrid, Real Betis, Villarreal are kind of three of their next games. And so suddenly we're looking at kind of Getafe coming into May with not many more points than they've got now. So the pressure's certainly on. I think there is an opportunity for Cadiz. Alaves, I'm not very confident of, and Levante either. But I think Cadiz do have a shot at survival, and there are kind of two or maybe even three teams, if we include Getafe, who could be put back into that mix.
Yeah, Getafe now 5 games without a win in La Liga, so they're slipping at the wrong time. Next weekend, of course, Mallorca take on Real Madrid tomorrow, so they'll take anything there as a bonus, you would think. And next weekend, the early game on Saturday is huge. It's Alaves against Granada at Mendizorroza. Well, leaving aside the slightly negative performances of the weekend, let's look at the positive ones. And it is time for MVP. So then, Sam, who is your first pick this weekend?
My first pick, just for the cult hero that he is, has to be Bebe. I mean, watching him at Vallecas, he's just one of those players who gets you up on your seat. And I think Robbie touched on it earlier in the podcast. And he's just a player who has a very specific role, but he's a player who will take players on and just shoot, even though nobody else on the pitch would shoot from that position. And that's exactly where the goal came from. I mean, he turned Ludwig Augustinsson inside out. And I won't say what I think of Ludwig Augustinsson because I don't think he's very good. But Bebe really made him look like a Sunday league defender. I mean, he was fantastic and just had that drive and that desire, which I think sometimes Rayo, I mean, they didn't have Isi Palazón, they didn't have Alvaro García, and they looked a little bit timid in attack, but Bebe was kind of like why are we holding back? Why aren't we going for it? He did it. And then shot from a crazy angle and beat Bono. I mean, Bono's a very good goalkeeper. So for me, I mean, Bebe has to be up there because he was kind of the driving force behind Rayo almost every time they moved forward with the ball. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, as you say, a cult hero, and nice to see him score again after that golazo in the Copa, which was unfortunately to no avail. For me, I'm going to go with Dani Parejo, a very cultured central midfield player. I know last week I was telling Rory that Carlos Soler is kind of like the next Dani Parejo, if you like, at Valencia. Well, this weekend Dani Parejo showed that the existing one is every bit as good as he always was. He scored the only goal in an important win for Villarreal. He dominated the midfield. Creates 3 key passes, over 90% pass accuracy. Very important for them that he continues to tick that midfield along. And he's such a great player to watch aesthetically. And he'll be massive for them in midweek in Turin as well. So good for him to come into this game on a very good, positive note. And also, it was really nice to see him dedicate the goal to Alberto Moreno as well, with the shirt and the post-match interview too. So, yeah, a really nice moment from him, and a lovely goal too. How about you for your second pick?
My second pick, I'm going to go for Ousmane Dembélé. I think, yeah, Barcelona scored lots of goals, and okay, I mean, Ferran Torres got two, that's worthy of a shout, but Ousmane Dembélé is just a player who, let's not forget, I mean, what, 6 weeks ago, he had his coach, his president, other players kind of telling him to leave the club or he wouldn't ever play for the team again. And here he is, 6 weeks later, he's kind of become the star. I mean, we saw him come on against Athletic Club last time they played at Camp Nou in La Liga, made an instant impact. And then against Osasuna, he was set up both of the first two goals after the penalty. And he just has that quality, that kind of cutting edge, that pass, that vision. And I think he's got that brilliant link-up play with Aubameyang that is helping Barcelona to get so much out of him since he's joined the club as well. And it's very hard to imagine now that Barcelona would not do whatever it takes almost to get Dembélé to commit his future to the club, because he's just become such an integral part of what Xavi is building, and he fits Xavi's system. I mean, he is one of those wingers that Xavi wants, a quick, pacey winger who can get down the flank and put deliveries into the box, and that's what Dembélé does. So for me, kind of overcoming the obstacles he's had to overcome and producing these kind of performances regularly, because this isn't the first time we've spoken about him in the last few weeks, that's what makes him an MVP. And against Osasuna, I think it wouldn't have been quite as comfortable a win if there wasn't Ousmane Dembélé on the right flank.
Last but by no means least, I'm going to go with a goalkeeper, Edgar Badia. We obviously said that Granada's attack is pretty toothless, but equally, the chances they did create, Edgar Badia was more than equal to it. Again, a massively important win for Elche, away from home, clean sheet, never to be taken for granted for clubs in the position of Elche. And yeah, it's remarkable to think that they started the season with Kiko Garcia in goal. And yeah, Francisco came in and almost immediately said, right, yeah, Edgar, you're the goalkeeper for me. Sorry, Kiko, you're on the bench. And we saw last season how impressive Edgar Badia was. You know, swapped shirts with Lionel Messi at Camp Nou. And yeah, this season, since he's come back into the team, he saved two penalties this season. And yeah, just an all-round good performance, solid performance. I think he breeds confidence into the defenders in front of him. We saw Mojica have a good game as well. And yeah, Elche just seem to be on a real kind of positive trajectory now. And he's a good solid base for them in that team. So yeah, him for me is worthy of a spot too. There's quite a few good goalkeeping performances this weekend, it must be said. But for me, Badia is probably top of that tree. So you can vote for your MVP on our Twitter poll on Monday, as ever. So to end this podcast this week, it's time for some moments of the week. Sam, you've got a lovely one from the Ciutat de Valencia, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly that. So not something that happened during the action, but something that happened before kickoff. Kind of the honorary kickoff taker at Levante this weekend was Artur Chubudia. I hope I pronounced that right. Who's a young boy who came from Ukraine. He'd visited Ukraine before on kind of exchange visits and stayed with the family in Valencia. And he became a Levante fan after the family took him to go and watch a game there. And now, obviously, he's sadly had to leave Ukraine with everything going on there. And the family he'd been staying with before has kind of taken him in. And so he had the whole of the stadium, the Estadio Ciutat de Valencia, giving him a standing ovation as he took the kickoff there in his full Levante tracksuit. And it was just one of those moments that was really nice to see. I mean, the news is so depressing at the moment and there's so much going on in the world. So to see everybody come together, see people in the stands with their Ukrainian flags and applauding this young kid who was only, I think, about 10 years old, who'd come over from Ukraine, had to leave both of his parents behind to come to Spain. And then to have the whole stadium applauding him was what football's all about, I guess.
Yeah, just a lovely scene and a memory he will have forever, young Arthur there. So yeah, a fabulous moment. For me, can't really compare, but I'll go with a footballing one. I'm going to go with Ferran Torres trying to score a hat-trick. Ricky Puig does amazingly well. His own shot is saved, he follows it up, and then he shows remarkable kind of delicate footwork to work the angle and score him for himself. But there's poor old Ferran open on the 6-yard box line, screaming for the ball to be squared because he has a simple tap in for his hat trick. So yeah, as good as it was for Ricky to score that goal, I did feel for Ferran. And of course, then he was hooked with the games coming up for Barca. So I feel like Ferran probably deserved a hat-trick on this occasion, but not to be, not to be. So yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thanks to Paco and Robbie for their insight. Thank you, Sam, as always. Check out our content on LaLigaLowdown.com. Follow us on Twitter for all the coverage this week. And yeah, we'll leave you with some commentary scenes from the Ciutat de Valencia as young Arthur there gets a fabulous ovation. So thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Sí, ¿qué tal? Saludos a todos y muy buenas tardes desde el Ciutat, con probablemente la imagen del aficionado más feliz de todos los del Ciutat de Valencia. Artur Chupira vino el lunes en un autobús de refugiados, el primero que salió desde Ucrania, estuvo en ese búnker y ayer conoció el Ciutat de Valencia.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.